Girlfriends podcast. This is your host, Sarah Nayani. For the very first episode, I wanted to do a little bit of intro and background. So I have my husband, Vikram, here to help.
Hey, Sarah.
Hey.
So I'm here to interview you today, right? In a totally normal way.
Totally normal to be sitting on our couch and interviewing each other. This is our normal Friday night.
Like most married couples do. So I guess to start off, what is Grow Girl Seattle?
It started as just a little Instagram account, mostly so I could stop annoying all my friends with my garden content. And so I just created a separate account where I could post it up over there of the beautiful garden that I was growing. And since then, I've slowly built it into a sweet little business here in Ballard in Seattle. And I grow and sell flower arrangements, flower subscriptions, and I do some event florals, and then also sell some garden items like potted bulbs.
Yeah, I get to see it every day, so I can vouch for how beautiful it is.
Oh, thank you.
So how did you decide to do a podcast?
Well, we're a big podcast household, so we listen to so many. I feel like you got me into them like 10 plus years ago now. So, but anyway, I took the floret workshop in 2021. And when you sign up for the workshop, there's this like online forum where you can see the other people that are in your area. So this woman, Jess, who was also in Ballard, she reached out to see if I want to get together with her and another Ballard grower that she had found. And so the three of us met up and we started chatting about flowers and we pretty much haven't stopped. We still meet up every month and we switch off like whose garden we're going to go to. And we text all the time too. So it's been pretty cool because we have, you know, we all have different business models and like interests within the world of flowers, but we all started our businesses around the same time. So it's been just kind of an amazing little group to chat with and kind of lean on each other and share advice and ideas. And sometimes we buy each other's flowers when we're short on flowers. We'll go in on things like wholesale orders together because most of the wholesale places, you have to order like a minimum quantity that would be way too big for any of us individually. But if we buy something together and split it three ways, it really helps. So anyway, these little flower friendships have been really important to me over the past year or more, and I just wanted to make a podcast about it and kind of turn those monthly conversations and those text messages just into like a flower podcast. So both Jess and Margaret that I mentioned before are going to be on this season, and then we'll have a bunch of other guests too. Okay, so long story short, I basically wanted to document and share the progress and the ups and downs of growing and selling and designing flowers and of starting a business like this. And I also just wanted to connect with my flower friends near and far. I feel like people who love flowers are my type of people, and it's just a great excuse to like talk to and learn from experts that I've kind of only dreamed of interacting with. So now I can email them and say, hey, will you be on my podcast, instead of just Instagram stalking them, I guess.
And turning them into flower friends.
Yes, exactly. You get it.
So over the course of the podcast season, you know, kind of what are some of the things that you're going to be covering?
So the first episode is going to be about building garden beds, and that episode is going to drop on Monday. It's with Hillary Dahl from Seattle Urban Farm Co., which is really exciting, like a gardening celebrity in my world. And then we have a seed starting episode, an episode about landscape design with my friend Dorsey from Blossom in Portland. And she's going to talk about sort of like setting up a landscape in your yard, which is something that I'm working on right now because I'm redoing our backyard to get more flowers into it. I'm going to talk about dahlias with my friend Margaret, hear a little bit my friends Jess and Kristen about their businesses. We have a couple florists coming on to the podcast. So I'm trying to hit like the different parts of the floral industry, from growing flowers all the way through to taking those cut flowers and making them into beautiful arrangements and then selling those. And yeah, so I really wanted this podcast to be for people who just love flowers, who might want to grow more flowers or try a different type of flower in their garden, or for people like me who are growing their flowers to design or arrange them and then sell. And then also for people who just dream of someday having a flower farm. Like, you know, I want to buy a big property out in the country and just grow millions of flowers. But in the meantime, I've taken over every single space in our tiny city lot.
You definitely have, but I think it's a really cool setup. Do you want to kind of describe how it looks like in our yard and in our driveway space?
Yeah. So during COVID in 2020, we like took over the sidewalk area. And so it was just a maybe 8-foot sidewalk strip. And it just had like, I don't know, kind of overgrown grass, I would say.
Like your typical city grass strip.
Yeah. So we dug that out and we put like some landscape fabric down. We put 3 beds in and then we put some wood chips around those. And so that's like the sidewalk part of it. And then at that time I was growing in the driveway on pots, but we have since, you know, gotten rid of all those and put beds right on top of the driveway. And those, it's built on top of cement, and so they have a liner and rocks for drainage and then soil. And then we have some along the side of the house, both on the side and in the front of the house. And then going into the backyard, we have more beds against the house. And then this past fall, I built a big perennial bed just in the shape of an F. And that was totally by accident. But once I stood back and looked at it, I was like, oh my God, I really do have flowers on the brain. And then we have another little bed where I put some kind of shade loving plants like hellebores.
Cool. And so what kind of flowers are you putting in like the different types of beds? Does it matter? Or like, how do you do that?
Yeah. So I separated them out to be like basically the front of the house is all annuals. And then in the back of the house is more like the perennial beds. So in the back, I have 2 beds that have like specialty mums, chrysanthemums. And then I have iris and roses, some different kinds of like little crabapple trees. They're called Everests. They're really beautiful branches. I have hydrangeas and peonies. And then in those beds, I have a bunch of like perennializing bulbs, like daffodils, fritillaria. Oh, and then I also have clematis back there and more roses because you never have enough. and then the hellebores that I mentioned as well. So that's kind of all in the backyard. In the driveway, I do have some peonies, but most of it is all annuals. And so right now in the driveway, I have 2 beds that are full of lisianthus. 2 beds with snapdragons. I have a bed that has something really cool. It's colibri poppies. And I planted those in December. So it's pretty cool that they've like lived through the winter. The little hairy flowers are starting to shoot up. So hopefully those will be ready to harvest in a month or so. And then I also have some ranunculus and anemones. And then 3 beds in the driveway right now are filled with tulip bulbs that I did in like a no-till tulip planting, where I basically put the tulip bulbs right down on top of the soil and then built up above the bed and put compost there. And so that's kind of cool because it improves the soil over the winter to have like 6-inch layer of compost sitting on top. And then when I harvest the tulips, I pull them out with the full bulb on, then everything that's just sitting on top is like really beautiful broken down compost that I can reuse for other beds once I pull all the tulips out. And then the soil that was sitting underneath there is like really well conditioned for the dahlias that I'm going to plant next.
That's really cool.
And then out in the front of the house, I have Icelandic poppies, foxgloves, more ranunculus, and a bed that I'm about to... I just finished harvesting the hyacinths from, and I'm about to put dahlias into there as well. And I also overwintered some dahlias in the beds as like a trial this year. So I'm really excited to like see how those turn out and just kind of like report back through the growing season. Like I don't know, highs and lows that I'm having throughout the season, or things that I've tried that have worked well, or things that I've tried that have really sucked. So yeah.
What are some highs and lows from this past growing season for you, or at least the growing season so far?
Well, so far this year, I had a major loss of dahlia tubers where I stored them over winter in vermiculite in these like plastic containers, basically. They're kind of like shoebox size. And I had them all like beautifully labeled. I had all the inventory. And I think it was like a little too much moisture in there. And then I also left them in the shed during like the 18 degree temperature drop. So I had already kind of gone through my dahlias and gotten out some that I didn't want to grow again this year. And so the ones remaining were ones that I really loved, and I lost most of them. And just,
that sucks.
Yeah. Funny enough, one of the only ones that survived is Cozy Town Bounty. And it's this really amazing grower that probably all the listeners know, but I don't know if you do. Mm-mm. So there's this woman, Leanne, that owns Cozy Town Flowers, and she breeds different dahlias, and it's this beautiful variety that she bred. And so I messaged her just to say, this was one of the only dahlias that lived. And she was like, baby, you found a cold hardy dahlia. So
our dahlias normally not.
No, you're normally supposed to store them between like 40 and 50 degrees. And so I think that it was a combo of having too much moisture and the temperature dip that killed all the tubers. So that was one like pretty big failure that I've had. And so for like something that I think has been going well is last year I decided that I could also buy in flowers. So I shop a lot at Seattle Wholesale Growers Market, and I buy flowers from like other local farmers. So I'm still supporting like small local flowers, and I'm mixing them with what I grow when I have them available. But one thing that that's really done for me is like take the pressure off of my garden. And so it's like if something's growing and it's working out great, then amazing. I'll add it to the arrangements or the subscriptions that I'm sending out. But if something isn't working, it kind of takes the pressure off where I don't have to like beg each stem to grow this week so that I can cut you for an arrangement. It just, I feel like it's a good way to be upfront with my customers that I'm going to buy in when I need to, and a good way to support like the local flower economy while still like getting the enjoyment from my own flowers and kind of like taking the pressure off me having to grow every single stem. Because we live in such a small house and a small like area of land that I just can't grow every single kind of flower that I want to use. So I would say that's been a major success in terms of like just giving me more leeway to experiment, learn about new flowers by going to the wholesale market, see other beautiful things that people are growing, and kind of specialize what I'm growing to just be things that are harder to find at the market, or just things that I'm really excited about and I want to have a big supply of, or colors that I really love, things like that.
Yeah. So like, because we have like such a small space, like how do you decide like what you want to grow? Is it like kind of what you're really into growing, or do you have to think about like what people would want to buy, or like kind of what's your thought process there?
Yeah, well, my major things that I love are different colors and textures, and the things that are hard to find are my favorite. And so things like clematis or vines or just really beautiful foliage can be hard to find. Like a lot of people use eucalyptus, and eucalyptus is gorgeous, but they're sort of like you can change the entire look of an arrangement or a bouquet with just the foliage. And so I'm trying to grow a lot of things that are really special and like harder to find so that my stuff has like a little bit of a unique look. And so, for example, I bought some frosted explosion grass from my friend Margaret at Ballard Urban Flowers last year, and it was so beautiful. And I think there was only one week that she wasn't using that for her own subscription. So I only had access to it for 1 week, but I just loved the look of that against the other flowers. And so I'm growing a bunch of that this year. There's a foliage called Apple of Peru that I really want to work with. And so I just started seeds for that. And just little special things that can be hard to find or that are very fragile. So basically, the less that you handle them, the longer they'll last. So if I'm cutting them from my own garden in the morning that I'm delivering an arrangement, it's going to just be really fresh. So,
you know, one thing I actually forgot to ask you, which is kind of embarrassing, is, you know, do you have a favorite flower? Because during the course of this interview, you've named, I don't know, 1,000 flowers. And so do you have a favorite one, or is that asking what your favorite child is?
Oh, it's so hard. Like just today I was working with these ranunculus from the market, and I was like, this is the most beautiful flower I've ever seen. I think it depends on the season, because like when peonies come in, I'm like, I just can't look away. Like, you know, if there's like flowers on our table, we're supposed to be like watching TV, but I'm just like staring at the flowers the whole time.
Yeah, I thought you were going to say sweet peas.
But sweet peas are definitely for the scent and just like the beautiful, gorgeous texture that they have. I know they're kind of a pain to grow, but that's one that I like to grow here because, oh, I forgot to mention, I have so many sweet peas that I'm growing. I sowed them in January outside. They're just like sitting on our picnic table, so I didn't think about them because they're not in the ground yet. But yeah, sweet peas. And then I would say foxgloves are another one of my favorite. I think they're just sort of like this just beautiful kind of spindly shape, and I don't know, it just seems like fairies live inside foxgloves. If there's such a thing as fairies, I think that's where they would live. So they're really magical. And some of my other favorite flowers are definitely lilacs. Just, I love the way they look and the way they smell. And then lupins. And I grew up in Maine, and so both of those flowers really remind me of home. And something kind of funny about lupins is that my family, there was like this big open field, and we would just like stop when we were driving by this field, and my mom would pick a few lupins to bring home and put on the table. We just thought it was like, I don't know, public land or something. And then in high school, I met my friend Annie. You know Annie.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Annie.
I got invited to her house to like go hang out, and she sent me her address. And so I am like driving over, and I start pulling in, and I realize that the lupin field is her family's property that my family had been stealing flowers from. So it's just kind of funny. I think a love of flowers definitely kind of like is in my family, and I definitely grew up just, you know, kind of losing my mind over beautiful flowers. And so it's cool that it's like come back in this way where I get to be like the science nerd that I am with like growing flowers, and just the kind of art nerd that I am of just like adoring looking at flowers. And I get to play with flowers all day, making arrangements and bouquets. And then one of my other favorite parts is just like when I deliver flowers and I get to see the excitement that people have, or that we share. So it's a cool little flower community.
Yeah. One of the things that you haven't really talked about are kind of like some of the people that have really inspired you, right? So like, I know a couple, but do you want to kind of talk about, you know, who, I don't know, like the patron saint of your garden is?
Yeah, well, Vic already knows that I decided that the patron saint of the Flower Friends podcast too is going to be Monty Don. He's my ultimate hero during COVID, and maybe even before. We watched like every episode of Gardener's World that we could possibly get our hands on here in the US. And what was that show? It was like Small Space, Big Dreams or something like that. Boop. This is Sarah. I'm cutting it in post-production to say it's actually Big Dreams, Small Spaces, and it's totally worth a watch. Where Monty goes around to like all these little places in England and basically like helps someone transform their garden over a season. That show like makes me cry. I love it so much. So yeah, anyway, he is my absolute hero. I have like all of his books. I just love his Instagram. I like know all the sections of his garden.
His dog's names,
yes. And so then obviously Aaron Benzikane from Floret. I took the Floret workshop. It's like an addiction. She just has such beautiful taste. She's growing the most beautiful flowers. The zinnia trials that she's doing right now are incredible. And so she, I decided, is going to be the high priestess of the Flower Friends podcast. So quite the pair there, Monty Don and Aaron Benzicane. And then, I mean, just, I have a lot of like florists that super inspire me. So one is Alyssa from Color Theory Design Co. She just does the most incredible, beautiful designs. Like, I didn't even know you could make things look like that. And so she's been a super inspiration. I love her work. And another florist that I'm just absolutely obsessed with is Yasmin May. I think she's in LA, and I just, her work is just so beautiful. She just really focuses on the flower. She'll do like whole designs that are just poppies. You can tell how much she loves like the form of the flowers. And I just, yeah, I could just sit with one single flower for like, I don't know, 20 minutes and just stare at it from every different angle. And I love it. It seems like she feels that way too, because she posts a lot of pictures of just single flowers, and then you see her work and it's like a celebration of that flower. And so anyway, it's really inspiring. There's so many other florists that I absolutely love. Those are just two off the top of my head that just, you know, every time I see something by them, it just like, I don't know, makes my heart melt, I guess, as cheesy as that sounds.
Yeah, well, that's not cheesy. I mean, what else inspires you?
That's a really tough question, because I'm just like driving around Seattle. I can just look at the way that like the light is hitting trees. Just little things like that just get me inspired all the time. You know, I'm just constantly looking out the window. Yeah, so I guess nature inspires me a lot. One scene that I just like can never get out of my mind is at my grandparents' house in Maine. They live near this place called Turbot's Creek, and we used to walk over there all the time and swim from the creek over to this island called Vaughn's Island. And basically, you would, you know, walk up onto the island and it would be sand and then stones and then kind of boulders and then marsh grass, kind of interweaving, and then these big Rosa rugosa bushes, and then it would go into this like big forest area. And just like the way that the textures and the colors all played against each other, just the way that it's like this natural kind of overflowing beauty, I think that scene just like always inspires me. And so it's like, you know, it sounds kind of weird to like plan your designs around like an island. It's not like I'm like picturing this island and trying to like redesign that, but just the way that like the natural layers and levels of like a forest or an island, the way that greenery kind of like comes together naturally, or even within a garden, the way that plants grow, it's not these perfect straight things. Like, yeah, I just love the elements of like trying to imitate nature, and or of just trying to focus on like these beautiful flowers and not have them be perfectly straight or perfectly in the right place, but just sort of, you know, sometimes it's okay to have an overlap or a spilling over of flower. If it's flowers, of course it's okay. It's just beautiful. And so I kind of just like imitating these beautiful scenes from nature in a way, if I can. Just bringing in elements of that, I guess.
Yeah, that makes sense. So I guess this question is kind of for me, because I am not an artistic person. And so I'm always in awe of people who have that ability. So how do you take that inspiration and then turn that into, you know, this beautiful bouquet or arrangement?
Oh, man. I don't know. I mean, I have been like a big science person in my life, so I don't even know if I would like classify myself as artistic.
You're artistic.
I don't know how to describe it, but I guess I just have like a series of beautiful images. Like, I'm just the annoying person that everywhere we go, I'm like, look at that mountain. Look at this vista. Look at this, like, oh my gosh, did you see that animal in the woods? Or it's just, I don't know, just this like millions of images in my head that like conjure beauty or nature. And I just kind of draw on those from different elements. And I kind of let like the flowers that I'm using guide me. So first I'll either go to my garden or to the wholesale market and I'll look for things that look really fresh and beautiful and just inspire me in that moment. They make my heart have a reaction, I guess. That's the only way that I can say it, is it's like it's pulling from all these like memories and beautiful things that I've just been so lucky to get to see in my life. And I can just look at one flower and it either the fragrance or the look of it just makes me, something just stirs in me. And so I'll pull that and kind of use that first thing that as like kind of an inspiration piece. And then I'll kind of plan everything else. Either it's things that I have in the garden, like, oh, these tulips would look really great with this, or things that are available at the market. And I love to like mix different colors, sometimes things that you wouldn't necessarily expect would look good together. Or, and so, yeah, I guess I start with like one or two things that are, that I just can't not cut or buy. Something that I just can't walk past without like stopping and staring at. And then I try to build the rest around there. And I mean, I'm still learning. Like this is going to be like a lifelong thing, I think. I mean, every arrangement that I do, I'm really starting to hone my voice more and just like, just really get to something that not just the individual flowers in the arrangement, but the entire arrangement itself, the composition, the layers, the textures stir that same emotional feeling for me. And I have a few that I've done recently that like, you know, I just make me emotional when I look at the photos of that, or when I looked at the arrangement, and when I show up to deliver that to someone, it's sort of like giving my child away, because a lot of these are flowers that I've grown myself and I've put so much of my heart into making that. And so for me, I don't know, I guess I'm just trying to capture a feeling or an emotion that I'm having at that moment. And it's kind of cool to look back on my different arrangements, because I can remember the exact thing that I was feeling when I was designing that. Yeah, it's really special.
That's so cool.
It's emotional.
I'm really jealous.
You have many other strengths. Thankfully, we complement each other pretty well, I think.
I hope so. So you kind of alluded to this a little earlier in the podcast, but you weren't always a flower farmer. Right?
No. Yeah.
So what were you doing before that?
Okay. Well, I was working for a fishing company before this, and it's actually kind of funny because there's a lot of similarities between like fishing and growing flowers, just in terms of sustainability and local and how important that is. So a lot of that kind of translated pretty easily for me. But yeah, I managed fisheries for the federal government. So basically for the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. It's like a department within that called National Marine Fisheries Service. And so when I graduated college, I was kind of working three jobs in Boston, and I got a call from NOAA, and they asked if I wanted to work on a lobster program there. So I started working in Gloucester and did like lobster permitting basically on the East Coast, and like exempted fishing permits, and then moved out to the West Coast for a trawl rationalization program, which basically just means quota that they were allocating to these longtime fishermen who had significant history and investment in that fishery. And so they granted them quota shares so that they could continue to fish. And so I came out here to help build that program. And then I started working for a company that fishes for pollock up in Alaska, and also for Pacific whiting on the West Coast. And so I did compliance and some government affairs, like policy type work for them, and then also some operations, like I was managing one of the fishing vessels and some of the major operational things on the boats relating to safety and in the environment. So yeah, and so then I was traveling a lot for that job, and then when COVID hit, it was the first time that I hadn't traveled in a while, so I really got into gardening like next level in 2020, and then I took the workshop in 2021, and so it just like kind of snowballed from there. But it really just started with like growing my own flowers and giving flowers to people, like friends. Everywhere we went, I would just bring flowers with me, and then realizing that this was something that I could try to sell and pursue. So I just did it as like a little tiny little like side hobby business while I was working for the fishing company. And then just kind of had like a
epiphany.
Yeah, just kind of had like an epiphany that this was what I was enjoying so much. And if I could spend more of my time doing that. So we shifted a lot of things in our lives. Like starting a business is not easy. And so as you know, and you've been like my number one support. So anyway, it's been a big steep learning curve. And I am still doing some work for the fishing industry to basically help.
So I guess last thing, how can people find you, Sarah?
Oh, good question. Okay, so I am on Instagram at Grow Girl Seattle, and then I created an Instagram for this podcast. It's called Flower Friends Podcast. And on that Instagram page, I'm going to be posting like when each new episode releases and just a post about the person that I interviewed. And so if you want to follow there, you can kind of see when the new episodes come out and what the topic is that we're going to cover.
Well, thank you. Thank you for letting me interview you. This is really fun.
Thank you for doing this.
hopefully I didn't ruin this by being too stiff.
No, I'm going to try to make you come on and be like the, I want you to be my podcast co-host, but it doesn't seem like that's going to work. So,
well, it depends on if people want me back or not, and then I'll think about it.
Oh, you're going to put it on the people. Okay.
So anyway, this has been really fun, and yeah, people listen to this, download it. It's going to be great.
Oh, thank you, Vic. All right. Well, that's it for today, I guess.
Smell you later.
Bye.